This time of year, everyone talks about going dry. But at Athletic Brewing Company, we're skipping that because we prefer going athletic, which isn't dry at all. From crisp Goldens to hoppy IPAs and limited releases in between, you'll find something that fits your style. Every single non-alcoholic brew is packed with flavor and the same craft experience you love. So yeah, you could call it dry, but there's really nothing dry about it. Find your new favorite near beer at athleticbrewing.com. Athletic Brewing Company, fit for all times.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in. This is another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented, powered, and you know it, by PPV.com. I am Dan Canobio. He is Chris Algieri, and we're trying something different on this episode. We are going to take a look back at a saga in the boxing world. I'm wearing my HBO boxing sweatshirt for a reason. I'm talking Miguel Cotto, Antonio Margarito, a three-year saga that involved controversy, plaster of Paris, beatdowns, you name it. We will get back to our normal schedule of talking about the boxing news, but it's a little slow right now, Chris, so why not take a look back? Before you look forward, you got to look back, they say.
Yeah, I mean, and we have a big year rolling out ahead of us. It just hasn't ramped up just yet, so why not? Let's talk about a little bit of nostalgia, especially one like this, which is tons of controversy and lots of different ideas. So what's up? I like it. I like it. I think we've got to see what the listeners think.
The listeners were excited. Dude, I put out a tweet, like, would anybody be interested in a Cotto Margarito look back podcast? And it just a flood of responses, all yes. Had people arguing about whether Cotto, whether Margarito really loaded the gloves. Mm-hmm. It was nonstop. So this controversy, even though it happened almost 15 years ago, even longer, it's still fresh in boxing fans' minds, and it's still a hot button topic because there is a small section of people out there, some in the media as well, that believe Margarito got railroaded and did not load the gloves up. What do you think of that?
I want to hear more about that because I don't know that contingent of people. I know everyone that I speak to is full on that Margarito was a cheater. He definitely loaded the gloves. If that happened, that fight would have gone a completely different way, kind of like it did in the rematch. But there's a lot of details that we need to discuss.
Right, and there are some fans that are new to boxing that don't really know about this saga, but have heard about it. And we had a lot of those responses from listeners, which I think is really cool. Yeah,
that is very cool.
Right. They're like, oh, I heard about this. Well, I'd love to learn more about it. So hopefully we can do that for you on this episode. But I put together a loose timeline. Then I want to get into each section of this timeline. July 2008, Margarito fights Cotto. Margarito obliterates him. Cotto's face is destroyed. Margarito is now the number one welterweight in the world. He is pound for pound now because Cotto was the number one welterweight in the world at the time because Mayweather had just retired, quote unquote, in 2008. January 2009, Margarito fights Mosley. They find plaster in the gloves or whatever you want to find in the gloves, but allow the fight to go on. Mosley at age 37 stops Margarito. Huge upset.
Viciously. Vicious stoppage.
Right. So that's January 2009. So they find that the plaster. They allow the fight to go on. There's an immediate investigation. Margarito suspended 1 year after the investigation where they found some type of misuse of the wraps, some type of coating, some type of plaster, I would say, inside of the gloves.
Well, let me give a little insight on that. Not to cut you off, Dan, in your timeline, but in terms of what that means with load of gloves, because maybe fans don't really know or listeners don't really know what that means. There's a couple things you can do. One is you can skin the gloves. You can take padding out of the glove, so there's less padding in the glove, and now it's more knuckle, less protection. So now I'm hitting more with my bones and my knuckles. And when you have a hand taped up, your hand is pretty close to a cast. Your wrist is locked in. You can squeeze a much tighter fist. And if you take the padding out of that glove, that becomes a lot more dangerous. Fists are dangerous anyway. Fists inside gloves are dangerous anyway. But if you take the padding out of that glove, and now we're guaranteeing I'm hitting you with my knuckles, which are again wrapped and protected and reinforced with the hand wrap and the gauze, very, very dangerous situation. You're talking about plaster of Paris. So a lot of times the trick with that is that there's like a powdered substance that needs to be wet for it to create a kind of like a cement, like a plaster of Paris cement structure. Like, I remember as being a kid making like a mask on a balloon, you do paper mache kind of thing. It's similar to that. So I heard stories about, it was the Louis Resto situation in the documentary of Assault on the Ring with Billy Collins. And what the coach was doing is, as he was rapping, he was sweating profusely and he was wiping the sweat off of his head and using that as the liquid to solidify the plaster.
Or else,
so then,
or else
as the fight wears on,
the fight goes on, right? Yeah.
That too, you sweat into it. And as the fight goes on, that plaster starts getting beaten down. It's wet. You're sweating into it. It gets harder and harder as the fight goes on. So you could imagine now, if you're hitting someone, even though, you know, if anyone who has ever felt a boxing glove, listen, it's soft leather. It's pretty soft. You can push through the padding. There is some padding, of course. But if you put a cast inside of that thing and then hit somebody with it, it's going right through that glove. It's going through that padding.
Well, Margarito, we'll get into that part of it too. Like, it wasn't like a plaster of Paris. It was some type of substance. It wasn't even the right substances that are in plaster of Paris, which they found. They found something different. And it hardened the gloves, supposedly. He got suspended. You know, this is the story as of today. I know there were other investigations, too, that we'll get into that kind of make, you know, what the Margarito truthers are leaning on. So the boxing world assumes that Margarito used plaster or some type of something in his gloves versus Cotto. But the tape was okayed before their fight. Margarito loses to Mosley. June 2009, Cotto sits out for a while. Cotto goes on to fight Pacquiao. Pacquiao destroys Cotto, one of Pacquiao's best performances. Pacquiao.
That was the best performance of Manny Pacquiao. That's his biggest, best win, as far as I'm concerned. He was on a different level that night. And for him to do that to Cotto, Miguel Cotto, the way that he did it, Cotto had nothing for him that night.
Nothing. So November 2010, Pacquiao fights Margarito. Margarito's reinstated, has a few tune-up fights, and Pacquiao obliterates Margarito to the point where his eye is almost, he almost goes blind. I mean, it was one of Pacquiao's toughest fights in terms of Margarito, you know, taking a lot of punishment, giving a lot of punishment to Pacquiao. Pacquiao wins, but this changes the trajectory of Margarito's career because his eye gets absolutely destroyed. Then 2011, December, Cotto fights Margarito in the rematch. A lot went into that rematch. I reached out to some people at Top Rank. You know, Cotto didn't want it right away. Didn't want anything to do with Margarito. Margarito's eye was a big time problem. They had a fight tooth and nail to get that fight okayed in New York. I was actually there and worked it out of college. It was my first assignment for HBO Boxing. I was in the truck doing replays, and I remember being there all week and all the craziness that went up right up until fight day about them okaying Margarito's eye. So that's the loose timeline on how this all transpires. It's crazy. It's 3 years worth of fights. It's 3 years worth of fighting outside and inside of the ring. It's Cotto potentially fighting De La Hoya and that fight being off, him going to Pacquiao then fighting De La Hoya instead. It changed a lot of things in boxing. That's usually how it works in boxing, Chris, where like it's one fight. And if you don't get a fight and if someone else steps in, it could change the course of boxing history.
Yeah, it's all about trajectories, right? Momentum's big in this sport. Trajectory is big in this sport, and you have a lot of crossroads situations and opportunities that can go this way or that way, and it can completely change someone's career. You know, this one obviously changed both these guys' careers dramatically in terms of where they could have went. Man, that Cotto De La Hoya fight, I would have loved to have seen that.
I always wondered why Cotto and De La Hoya never crossed paths because it had all the makings. Like Cotto, big name. De La Hoya, big name. Mexico versus Puerto Rico.
Mexico, yeah.
I didn't know that they had it all lined up. Like, it was ready to go. If Cotto would have beat Margarito, I read that Cotto had a $25 million offer on the table to do that fight. Obviously, he loses, and then they slide in Pacquiao to fight De La Hoya, which at the time didn't seem even feasible because Pacquiao wasn't even a welterweight. So,
no, he jumped up. Weight class was his first fight, and he beat the hell out of De La Hoya.
Yeah, I mean, ended De La Hoya's career.
Yep.
But Cotto ended up, you know, fighting Mayweather, ended up fighting Canelo.
Canelo.
This was a sidestep in his career, and it was a big one. But now we'll go to the lead up to the first fight.
You think about it, Cotto fought Pacquiao, Mayweather, and Canelo.
Yep.
Wow.
This guy got the most out of his career.
Yeah, I was looking up the records before, you know, before our show, I didn't realize Cotto had so many fights. 47 professional fights. That's a lot. Like you longevity, said, the most out of your career.
2017, yeah, man, you know.
And he had a rough career. He had some really, really tough fights throughout because he fought really tough guys very early on. Even at 140, he had some really rough fights in there. And then he went all the way up to 54 fighting the best guys around.
None rougher than July 26th, 2008. Cotto Margarito. Let's set the scene here on who Miguel Cotto was at this time and who Antonio Margarito was at this time. Cotto undefeated. He had wins over Judah. He had wins over Mosley. He had already been a champion at 140 pounds, where he had 6 title defenses. He was Puerto Rico's star. He was the heir to Felix Trinidad, but he was nothing like Trinidad in terms of personality. He was hard-nosed, just a great, great fighter that Top Rank was procuring and just
man
molding.
Of few words also.
Man of very few words. Also like to talk in the third person. Miguel Cotto is very excited for this fight. Miguel Cotto is ready to fight.
But it wasn't pretentious the way he did it. It wasn't like this jerk. It's like it's just like that
Miguel Cotto loves Miguel Cotto. He's one of my favorite fighters because he always fought in New York, and I probably went to 10 of his fights in New York, and starting off with those wins over Judah, which was the night before the Puerto Rican Day Parade in June.
Mosley people forget that awesome Judah fight. Was the king of Brooklyn. Like he was Brooklyn. He was so New York. All the New York fans loved him. So making
Tyson
this fight,
co-signed him.
Yeah, 100%. Like he was like taking over. You know the Tyson Brooklyn era, and then when they make this fight, I mean, you've got Judah, you got the king of Brooklyn, you know, the heir apparent, and then you've got Cotto in Puerto Rico. I mean, New York City is loaded
with
Puerto
Ricans.
One? I was not.
I went to Cotto Judah, and I mean, there's nothing that compares to those crowds.
Yeah,
I mean, it is the night before the Puerto Rican Day Parade with a Puerto Rican fighter, a title guy, a guy that you can really get around, like. No offense to Berlanga, but like someone like that the fans were really believed in. And it was
but
after
was already an established, like we're not going to knock Berlanga. Berlanga's like young and fresh and new. Like Cotto was an established guy. Like
champ.
He was, dude, I remember watching like his pro debut on ESPN Friday Night Fights. Like he everyone knew what you had with him. He was going to be a star, and then he actually became a legend. So that's one of those guys where it's like, all right, everything's laid out. You're supposed to be that guy. And not only did he step up to the plate, he surpassed even the expectations. He's an absolute living legend.
Yeah, so at this point in 2008, in July, he's got 2 fights at 147 and 2 wins over Judah and Mosley. He has the 6 defenses at 140. He's built up. HBO's behind him. This is his first fight in Las Vegas. Because Top Rank was like, all right, let's get him out of New York. Let's broaden his horizons. Let's set him up for this second portion of his career where we can get him into Vegas, get him into new crowds. He was number 1 welterweight, according to Ring Magazine. He was number 6 pound for pound. And this was the move. This was, all right, like, let's see what you're really made of. And let's get, you know, you maybe a fight with De La Hoya after this. If Floyd comes back, you can fight Floyd. This was Cotto's move, his movement towards becoming an even bigger star. Now, Margarito was looked at as a monster, Chris, and throughout his whole career. 147, wrecking ball, had some losses on his record, lost the decision to Paul Williams in 2007.
Lost early on in his career, quite a bit.
Like, which we'll have to, like, do some foreshadowing. Like, he wasn't, like, this elite guy like Cotto was heading into it, which makes you think with the gloves and everything. But
he's
in 2008, like, what were you hearing about Margarito?
That he was just a giant. Like, it was crazy that he made weight. His chin was out of control. You could hit him with anything. He didn't mind getting hit. And he was just a two-fisted destroyer. Like, he blew out Sergio Martinez early in his career. Like, it was, he beat him up like it was his little brother. Like, the guy was just, when he was on, like, he was a wrecking ball. And he was going to hurt you. He was going to disfigure you. He was going to put you away. And you could hit him with whatever you want. Didn't matter. Have you ever met Margarito?
Not like formerly. I've been in rooms with him.
One of the tallest Mexicans I've ever seen. Aside from, like, we're in this new era where we have these giant Mexicans like Zerto, but you know, back then it wasn't like a really tall. He was a tall, rangy, gangly Mexican, almost like a Carlos Monzon esque build and style. Because Carlos Monzon got hit a lot too. He was a guy who was a very very rough, very aggressive, similar style to how Margarito was back then.
Yeah. So he loses the decision to Paul Williams 2007. He bounces back, gets some wins, enough for them to set up this HBO pay-per-view. You know, he's I think he was the sixth. He was in the top 10 as a welterweight. And the welterweight picture at this time was changing because Floyd retired. And Pacquiao was not really in the picture yet at 147. De La Hoya had already moved up and fought numerous times at middleweight. He was about to retire. It was like Cotto's for the taking. But also, like, they had these bit players, and that's Margarito, that's Paul Williams, Mosley still lingering around who got into the mix. Like, 147, Ricky Hatton. Like, 147 was pretty loaded at the time, but this is the fight that Top Rank
loaded
knew was going to make.
Big names, but not guys that were, like, superly over-the-top talented. Like, Ricky Hatton was not a very...
154 now.
Yeah, Hatton wasn't really great at welterweight, but he was a big name, humongous name, you know, like... Paul Williams, he was flirting around those weight classes too. Definitely a difficult style, of course, obviously, but like, I don't know, wasn't like they weren't these superstar, super talent guys like you know, like you said, like they are at 154. So there was places for these guys to fit in. Like Shane Mosley was still able to be a viable guy, at 37, and you know, had taken some bad losses in his career, taking a lot of damage,
taking a lot of PEDs.
Yeah, that too, getting caught for PEDs.
I was watching the Margarito Mosley, and HBO did a full on, like, never did those vignettes. It was like 5-6 minutes of Mosley's drug use. And I was like, man, they would never do that now. Like,
no.
Heavily produced.
Yep.
Lampley, sit down, you know, look like a documentary. They had like the press clippings, like going across the screen, like
Balco.
They would never, Balco, like, they would never do that now. Like, no. This was HBO. Like, that's another thing too. Like, these productions were amazing. Like watching these HBO productions,
amazing.
I was like, good God,
wow.
We've fallen off so far.
Yeah. But that's the problem is the long form isn't really a thing anymore. It's so unfortunate. HBO did it the best, better than anybody. But yeah, no, in the 90s, I think, you know, people who are some of our younger listeners might not understand, like, people failed drug tests a lot. Like, it wasn't that big of a deal back then, crazy as you know, as it is to say. A lot of top guys did. A lot of things got swept under the rug. You're seeing a little more, you know, negativity about it now, thank God. But you asked me before, Dan, I forgot to mention this. You asked me, like, what were you hearing about Margarito? What do you remember him from back then? I remember that Lujan fight where he busted his ear out of his head.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was one of the most grossest things I had ever seen. Sebastian Andres Lujan. It was one of his title defenses at 147 was Margarito. And he stopped him in the 10th round due to a busted open ear. Like, literally, the ear was just, like, inside out, flapped over. And it's crazy because we do the videos in Church Street, and there's a big picture from that fight with his ear hanging half over. So I always remember that. Remember, I told you he busted your face up. He left marks. He was known as that kind of guy. He was a destroyer. He was gonna not only hurt you and try and knock you out, he was going to disfigure you. And I just remember him busting open that man's ear. I think it was inside and out. If anybody wants to see something really nasty, look up that fight.
Yeah, he was just your, in terms of his style, prototypical Mexican, come forward, take three to land one, heavy hands,
just
iron
axe murder. I'm just going to come forward and chop you down.
He just looked like a freaking, like the antagonist.
He looked like the bad guy in a horror movie. Yeah, he looked like a bad guy in a horror movie. Like, he's just like, I'm gonna crawl out of the closet in my trench coat and hack
you
up.
That's what also contributes to him being the anti-hero and him being the villain, because he literally looks embraced it towards the second fight with Cotto. But I mean, the guy just looks like a villain. So, like,
remember him and Brandon Rios making fun of Freddie Roach because of his Parkinson's, playing the bad guy, and everybody hated him for that, and Pacquiao took it out on him.
Pacquiao destroyed. We'll get to that. All right, so we're setting the stage now. Cotto, Margarito. Where I want to pull this up. All the boxing media was in a freaking lather for this fight, talking about how awesome it was going to be. A modern day classic. You had all of the boxing media, Kevin Ioli at the time, Dan Raphael, I want to find it in the back. Where is it? The hype and the lead up. They were really pumping this up, this fight.
As they should have. It was a great, great Puerto Rico Mexican matchup, man.
Because of the Puerto Rican Mexican matchup, because of the styles. Margarito come forward, and take punishment. Cotto, more of a boxer, a mover, but is powerful in itself. Like, styles make fights. We know that. And, like, this is the first big fight outside of with Mayweather retiring and all that. So the media was really talking this fight up, and it delivered in more ways than one. But let's get over to MGM Grand, Las Vegas. Cotto was 27, Margarito's 30. Like I said, Cotto's first fight in Vegas. Aram ready to expand that fan base. Cotto was the WBA welterweight champion, 2-1 betting favorite. The fight generated 450K pay-per-view buys. Complete different time at, you know, Cotto's first time really on pay-per-view. Margarito was not really a household name. Third highest of 2008 in terms of pay-per-view buys. As for the actual fight, went back and watched it over the weekend. Cotto dominating the first four rounds, Chris.
Just boxing.
Moving, landing everything. Margarito looks slow. He looks like he can't handle it. This is Cotto's boxing beautifully, showing why this guy could be pound for pound number one for the first 4 to 5 rounds.
But Margarito was landing. That's the thing that I know. Listen, it's the old story about, like, Mark McGuire was on steroids. But listen, he had to put the bat on the ball. Right. And Margarito, even though those early rounds, he's losing the rounds, he's getting outboxed, he was still landing. Cotto's not an easy guy to hit. When he was on his boxing, when he was on his lateral movement, firing off his shafts, throwing combinations, he was a hard guy to hit. Margarito was able to find him a lot in those first couple rounds. So, like, a lot of that damage was started out early. I was surprised. Margarito puts on so much pressure, and he doesn't stop. And when you got a guy who doesn't care what's coming back his way, he punches with you. So yeah. Even though you're landing, he's landing with you. And for the most part, because his chin was so good, a lot of times he would get the better of those one-on-one 50-50 situations.
So Cotto is definitely winning the fight for the first 6 rounds. Yeah, but you can't deny that Margarito is closing the distance. He's landing here and there, maybe one or
but
two
Margarito's
at a time.
Margarito's confidence was always right. So crazy. He was always
scary.
So confident.
You can see that he's a second-half fighter. You can see that. When we get to the wraps, why that's a big thing on him being able to get through those first couple rounds to allow those wraps to harden. And then in the second half of fights, kind of do his thing and really wear you out. But that was also what Margarito was, too, to play devil's advocate here. Like, to those out there that don't believe he had the hand wraps, it's like, we've seen fighters like this all the time. It takes them a little bit to wake up. They take a lot of punishment early on, but they're not out of it by any means. Their trainer's not going to step in and stop the fight. And then you see a late stoppage, or you see them turn the tides, or you see them close the gap. That was Margarito.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was a war of attrition always. And he was like, it was such a willingness to be like, all right, you hit me and I'm going to hit you back, and I'm going to hit you more. I'm going to hit you harder. I don't care how hard you hit me. You're not going to hit me as hard as I'm going to hit you. And so it was always that war of attrition back and forth. It was checkers, not chess, if you want to put it that way, because Cotto was out there boxing, moving, being smart, being elusive. That was just not Margarito's game. He was going to, like, we're going to go into deep waters and we're going to see who's got the legs to keep going. And that's a tough style to be in the ring with.
It really was an electric type of fight. The crowd was really into it. And you see, it had the perfect storyline starting to develop. Cotto getting this early lead, but also taking shots middle round. 7th round comes and the tide completely changes. It's no longer, oh, Margarito's kind of in this fight. It's like, oh no, Margarito's starting to stagger Cotto. Cotto is visibly hurt. He's shaking. He's holding. Props to Cotto, though. In my memory of this fight, I always thought like it was like a runaway train for Margarito from the 7th round. Now, Cotto won some rounds between the 7th and the 11th and fought super tough when he was really, really hurt. But at this point, Margarito has kind of taken over control. And yeah, he might be down on the cards, and I think Harold had it pretty close for Cotto. But if you just took a look at the two, Margarito is like, all right, this is my fight to win for the second half of this fight.
Well, Cotto was always actually a pretty good fighter at fighting hurt. You know, he got hurt in the DeMarcus Corley fight early on in his career. He got hurt by Ricardo Torres really bad. He boxed really well when he was hurt. He had a couple of moves that he would do. He was good at tying you up because he's, you know, a physical guy, but he hit you low. He didn't care. He'd hit you low, get a little extra time. He obviously had great power, but his body punching, he'd always go back to the body whenever he was hurt and kind of level the playing field. Super, super smart and aware when he was hurt. Listen, Cotto, he was always in a fight. Like, even when Saddam Ali, when he fought him way long in the tooth, it was Cotto's last fight. He blows out his bicep, his left arm, which is just his jab and his hook anyway.
That was a sad
He still fought really tough in that fight. Wouldn't give up. Wouldn't stay down. Didn't get stopped. Cotto is a warrior, and he would always go out in a shield if the opportunity was there. So I'm not surprised. I do remember him fighting really, really tough in that fight, but just getting weathered down.
Yeah, well, literally. 11th round, fight ends. Cotto's face looks like something out of a horror movie. Like,
yeah,
it looked like just the what's that movie? It's not the Mask movie. Frig. It was swollen. His face looked like
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No, the one that has a million iterations, horror movie, red stripes on the face. Once per episode, we do this. Whatever.
Your movie references are rough, dude.
I'm not a horror guy either. Like, his face was so, he looked like he had botched Botox. He looked like a 6 year old socialite that was trying to turn back the hands of time with their face, and he just looked. I've never seen a face like that. That swollen.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like what's her name? The Madonna.
Yes, right now. Exactly.
Yeah, but he was swollen on every part of his face. There was notches on his forehead. Nose was busted up. Jaw swollen. Yeah, you name it. I mean, every part of his face was affected by the punches.
Yeah, the referee waves it off. His family devastated because Cotto's family was always at all his fights, front and center. Margarito jumping up and down. He is now Lampley. Exhilarated, said, you know, makes a grand announcement that Margarito is now the best welterweight in the world. This is the Margarito coming out party. This is finally his time in boxing. And now everyone's going to have to go through him. Everyone had been avoiding him for all the reasons that we said before. Just a crazy moment. And for Cotto, his first loss. Like, we just told you about Cotto and what he was and where he was headed in his career and where Top Rank had placed him. And, you know, we're talking about top 5 pound for pound type of fighter.
But Dan, it wasn't just a loss. He got beat the way he beat guys. He got beat the way that he beat guys. He would beat people's bodies up. He would break them down. He'd bust them up. He would set a pace, and his accuracy wouldn't allow anyone to stay in a fight. That's exactly what happened to him. Margarito couldn't miss in those last couple rounds. Cotto was hurt to the body, to the head. Nothing was working. He had no power left. He was just taking a vicious beating towards the end of that fight. And he stuck in there because he's super tough. But, like, that's how he beat everybody. So for him to lose, not just his first loss, but in the method and how it happened, especially losing to a Mexican when you're a Puerto Rican pride, oof, that was a rough night for Puerto Rico.
Dan Rifuel of ESPN.com at the time described the fight as a riveting slugfest with a dramatic ending that left a throbbing crowd of 10,477 at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in ecstasy.
That's an interesting word choice there, Dan.
Throbbing.
What am I reading? A romance novel? What the hell was that?
Ecstasy and throbbing, two words I do not want to hear together, written by Dan Rafael.
In boxing at all.
Oh, man. I do leave the arena sometimes feeling like I'm on ecstasy after a big fight. There's nothing better. It takes a while to come down. That was
definitely
weird.
Feel like I'm on drugs after a big fight. It takes a while to
come
down.
You need a couple drinks. You need some food.
Got to mellow out.
Chris hops on a red eye because he's a psycho. Yeah. The referee for the bout, Kenny Bayless, called it the best fight he's ever done. FightNews.com writers Andreas Hale and Victor Perea called it an instant classic that gave boxing fans all over the world all they can handle. And then some. Even CompuBox wrote the computer itself. Margarito Cotto was billed as the battle, and it certainly lived up to the name, as they prove why they are among the best boxing has to offer. It got Fight of the Year candidates. I did not think it won Fight of the Year. But after the win, Margarito becomes number one, Ring Magazine number one welterweight in the world. He replaced Cotto. Cotto dropped to number three in the rankings, number 10 pound for pound. With the loss, Cotto's fight with Oscar De La Hoya, which would have guaranteed Cotto $25 million, was off.
$25 million back then. Man.
De La Hoya instead opted to fight Ring Magazine's number one ranked pound for pound fighter, Manny Pacquiao, in December of 2008. We all know what happened there. Pacquiao pieced him up. De La Hoya retires.
But real quick, I know you remember it because obviously you went back and watched it. But those last couple knockdowns, they were hard to watch. Cotto,
yeah, he was just
succumbing. It wasn't like he was getting hit with anything big that was putting him flat on his back or like hitting him and then just like goes down. Like, it's just like there were two knockdowns. They were both almost like taking knees. He was trying to get away. He was being completely smothered. The first one was like kind of a slip, half goes down, but his face is a mess. And then he gets up and he just goes back straight into the corner and then just goes down. Ref calls it off. No complaint. those are hard to watch from a guy like Cotto, who always got up, who always found a way to win. And for him to be weathered down, beat down that way, that was hard to watch as a fan. And I was a fan of Cotto then.
Yeah, it was tough because he's such a prideful guy. And, you know, he was the favorite in this fight. Like, Margarito's tough, but, like, he already had some losses. You know, everyone was looking at Cotto as the next big thing in boxing. So
did you always like Cotto?
Me? I loved him from day one.
Yeah, so I remember watching him early on, and I was really impressed with what I saw. But I was also, like, I don't know, like because I was fighting then, you know, like, you know, he was a little bit ahead of me because you know, our friend Paulie Malignaggi got to fight him. And I remember, you know, and again, Paulie was a little bit ahead of me. Cotto's a little tall, a little older than me. I saw him like in my crosshairs. So I was always kind of
more,
like,
respect for Paulie than going into the lion's den against Cotto.
Everyone does. And he fought great that night. But yeah, I was not like a huge Cotto fan. I think because I had him in my crosshairs a little bit until the Shane Mosley fight when he out jabbed Shane Mosley. I was like, oh man, this guy is the guy that everyone's talking about. He's not just blowing guys out. He's not just a puncher. He's not just a guy who's fighting guys that he's supposed to beat. Shane was a problem then, and he out jabbed him, outclassed Shane Mosley, and I was like, all right, this guy.
Yeah, that was his legitimacy, because you kind of felt a little of like the HBO machine, Top Rank machine behind him.
Yes, that was where I was coming from, where I was like, I don't exactly love this guy because, like, listen, there's so much behind him. They want him to be this guy, but when he fought Shane and did what he did to Shane, I was like, all right, this is real.
Well, just being as a New Yorker, he's the guy that just kept fighting at MSG and giving us like awesome nights. And like me and my buddies would get tickets and go, and like there were huge events. And, you know, how do you not?
But I was also a Zab guy too, though. So beating Zab, I didn't like that. As a fan, I'm biased. I was a very biased fan. If you beat my guy, I didn't like you.
Of course. That's what fans are to this day. I mean, there's guys out there, you know, riding for Crawford, and, you know, Crawford Canelo is close to getting made. And I'm seeing on Twitter, like, oh, all you Crawford fans are going to cry when you know, there's fandom. Like, I'm not a fan anymore. Like, the one thing I miss is that, as I get more into the media, is like, I'm not a fan of any particular fighter. I'm just a fan of the sport.
We had to give that up.
Right. I'm a fan of the sport thriving. So if
you want,
a great
you
fight,
want what's good for the sport. It's not, exactly. It's not selfish anymore. It's not like what you want to see. It's not your guy. Right. You know, it's what matters.
So 6 months later, after Cotto gets destroyed by Margarito, Margarito's on top of the world, and he goes and he fights 37-year-old Shane Mosley at Staples Center. Mosley coming off of a win over Mayorga. Like you said, he fought Cotto tough in 2007. It was a loss, but it was razor thin. He wasn't washed by any means with Mosley being 37-year-old. He was coming off of the PED failed test. And
he also went back down to 47 because he was fighting at 54. It's crazy to do that at 37.
Well, he looked great. That was when I was rewatching this fight.
He did look great.
He looked like he said this is like where I should be fighting at 147, and even at 37 years old, which is wild to boil down to that. Still fast, still quick, because he absolutely obliterates Margarito. Huge
underdog. Couldn't miss
with
the right hand. He was throwing those right hands from the seventh row, and Margarito could not get away from him. I mean, swinging haymaker knuckle punches from across the ring. Margarito had no defense.
Right. Mosley, huge underdog in this fight. The money line closed as the fight got closer, but no one was really picking Mosley because we just said, you know, he had a few losses on his career, 37 years old, off of PEDs, allegedly. Could still have been on him at the time. And Margarito is coming on.
He's been fighting at 54. He had like big fights at 54. De La Hoya, Winky Wright twice. And then he moved down to 47. Then went back up to fight Fernando Vargas twice at 54. And then moves back down to fight, you know, Margarito at 47. It's crazy. He fought Mayorga at 54. Like, the guy was constantly fighting up and then going back down, jumping up and down. Pretty wild.
They do the fight at Staples Center for the Mexican crowd for Margarito. So, like, this is a guy Margarito had who there was never fights tailored for him. He was always the B side. He was always the guy begging to get some attention. Well, he's now number one welterweight in the world. Top Rank has a piece of him. Top Rank's very smart. We'll put it at Staples Center. It sells out. It's one of the biggest gates you'll ever see. But also because Mosley California guy too, and he had some fans there too. And at the end of the night when he won, the crowd was going nuts for Mosley because they had seen something crazy. You know, they had seen a big upset. But what's really crazy is what happened before the fight. And this is when we get into the controversy. This is when we get into the hand wrapping. This is when we get into the juice, the bones of this saga. Before the fight, brother Nazim Richardson. You have any run-ins with him?
Yeah, from
Philly.
Yeah, but no, the fighter, I'm drawing a blank right now, USSR, Steve Cunningham.
Right.
So they trained together, and we fought on the same card a few times. Steve's a great guy. Great, great champion, cruiserweight. And Phil dealing with Nazim. One of those nights, yeah, I forgot which. He was at my fight when I fought Peralta. And then afterwards, I ran into him, and he goes, you don't get tired. He's like, you throw a lot of punches, and you don't get tired. He's like, you better watch out. I mean, he's on all the fighters. Right? You better watch out. He's like, this guy, he don't get tired.
He was a great interviewer. Remember, you know, he's passed on.
Swimming don't get wet.
Right.
He gotta go swimming without getting wet.
In the corner when HBO was something that we don't see anymore in boxing either is the corner, mic'd up corners. And he was always great for a sound.
Teofimo Lopez Sr. ruined that. No more mic'd up corners.
Well, if they do the corners now, it's John Fury screaming, or it's a horrible corner where knock him out,
Yeah. Go, wake up, get him.
What happened to the We Are Firemen moment?
He was a poet.
Nassim Richardson, what happened to let me pour some water on your balls? What happened to
you're blowing it, kid.
Your speed, son.
You're blowing it, kid.
You're blowing it, kid. You can't handle your speed, Roach. Freddie Roach saying to Pacquiao. So Nassim Richardson. This guy is a big-time player in this controversy because before the fight with Mosley, Javier Capetillo was the trainer for Margarito. He's wrapping Margarito's hands while four commission inspectors and Mosley's trainer, which was Nassim Richardson, were looking on. After Capetillo finished wrapping Margarito's right hand, Mosley's trainer asked inspectors to physically inspect a pre-made gauze knuckle pad insert that Capetillo was about to wrap over Margarito's left hand. The inspectors found that the inner layers of the pad were discolored and that the pad felt harder than it should have. In a report prepared after the inspection, Commissioner Inspector Choev Guevara described the gauze pad removed from Margarito's left hand as dirty looking and smeared with a white substance that looked like plaster and was hard to the touch. Concluding that the pad violated the rules, the inspectors confiscated the pad, instructed Capetillo to prepare a new one. Mosley's trainer then asked the inspectors to examine the gauze insert in Margarito's hand, already wrapped right hand. Margarito insisted that there was nothing in the right hand, holding his hand up out and saying, touch it, feel it, go ahead. There was nothing in there. The inspectors ordered the wrapping removed and found similar improperly hardened pad in the right hand as well, which they confiscated. After Capetillo prepared two new knuckle pads, the inspectors approved Margarito's hand wraps and allowed Margarito to proceed with the fight. So there it is. Trace elements of calcium and sulfur, if you really want to get technical. A lot of people in that room, Chris. A lot of inspectors making decisions. And
so for the people at home, a little Inside Boxing Live for you. So when you are getting wrapped, you're allowed a member of the opposing team to watch you get wrapped for this reason. So this is exactly what was happening with Nazim Richardson, having somebody over there making sure that what's going on with those wraps is proper. Also, hand wraps, tape, they're all supposed to be brand new out of the box. They're supposed to be wrapped up. You're not supposed to be able to bring anything from anywhere else because you can tamper with it. It's just like this. So everything is supposed to come out and you're supposed to make
it's supposed
your
to be fresh.
Has supposed to be fresh. It's got to be out of the box.
An old one. Their
can't do that.
Defense was like, oh, these are old. That's their defense. But one of their defenses was, oh, these are like old wraps we use all the time in practice. Or yeah, not practice, but in gym.
You can't do that on fight night because and not for nothing, even just sweating into it, those knuckle pads get hard too. I used to reuse knuckle pads all the time in the gym, you know, for sparring, but they were under 16-ounce gloves. But yeah, those things they get stiff and they get harder. I don't know how hard these things were, but regardless, everything is supposed to be fresh out of a wrapper, out of the bag. You're supposed to so guys are at home, you make a knuckle pad, and what a coach will do is he'll wrap them around his knuckles or his fingers. He'll spread his fingers and wrap it around, and it creates a gauze padding. And it's the size of your fighter's knuckle breadth, and then you wrap that and you put that on top of the knuckles to pad the knuckles, and then you gauze over on top of that. So what they're saying is they were using a reused pad, which is you're not supposed to be able to do. And they were using that as a pre-made knuckle pad. I remember my coach, Keith Trimble, when he would come in, the first thing he would do when we got into the dressing room is he would make the Nicolas pad. He grabbed the inspector. He'd be like, all right. He's like, I'm opening the bags. Here we go. He's like, I'm going to make this. And when it's time to wrap, these are going to be here. They're going to be ready. And you put them on. So it doesn't take that much time to do. Because making the knuckle pad takes forever.
Yeah. There's a lot of people in that room. There's a lot of eyeballs in there. And Nassim Richardson.
Oh, and also, like, something. When you go to the bathroom, like, you have an inspector with you just in case you take anything that's in the stall, you know, because you can't. So in New York, in New York, it's really bad. Like, not bad, but it's very, very, very intense in terms of the way that they monitor the fighters prior to fight night, because you can't drink anything but water. You can't have Gatorade. You can't have sugar. You can't have anything. You can't have gum. They don't want you to have gum because you could have caffeine in the gum. It could be a Nicorette, whatever. So you literally have water and it has to be provided by them. So very, very strict in New York. I don't know how it is in a lot of other states, but there's a lot of oversight when it comes to that kind of stuff prior to a fight.
Right. So they find the pad and they take it out. He rewraps the gloves a total of 3 times, and they set off to the ring. They have a fight. HBO doesn't mention it. It wasn't reported on the broadcast till well after the fight was over. As we just said, Mosley goes out and takes out Margarito, which is red flag number one. Margarito, coming off of the best win of his career over Cotto, where he looked invincible, gets taken out by a 37-year-old XPED coming down in weight fighter in Mosley. Red flag number one. So they go through with the fight, and at the end of the broadcast, remember, it would always be Lampley, Larry Merchant, and I think in this case it was Max Kellerman. They would always give their final remarks. Mm-hmm. And that is at that point when Merchant reported that he had just been told by the LA commission that they found the hardened substance in Margarito's gloves, and they weren't in the gloves for the fight, but that is something. Wow. That's a big story. Lampley says, then Lampley on the fly says, wow, this really makes you think about what happened in that Cotto fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because not a lot of people were like putting two and two together. They were just thinking, oh wow, he tried to load his gloves against Mosley. Lampley,
smartly, is that old saying, you never get caught the first time,
right?
So he said the thing everyone was thinking.
He said, like, right, and this is like before Twitter, this is like before the internet was crazy. So Lampley gets this ball rolling of, I mean, eventually someone would have put two and two together and raised that question about Cotto, but props to HBO and props to them for kind of bringing that to light. Because I was watching it, I'm like, when are they going to report this? Like, why aren't they? Like, the fight was happening. I'm like, are they going to talk about it on the ring walk? Like, are they going to mention it during the fight? And then it was the very last thing they went off the air with was Lampley saying, oh, this really like makes you think, how long has he been doing this? And did he do it against Cotto? Because that really makes you think about how that fight played out with Cotto. We'll go back to that one now, Chris, where getting beat pillar to post by Cotto for the first 6-7 rounds. Yeah, having his moments. But as we know with this substance, in this case, is when you sweat, it makes it harder. 7th, 8th round, those punches are starting to land on Cotto. Something crazy. 7th, 8th round of the Mosley fight, the fight's over. he lost. So, like, you're building this case, where there's not a lot of, like, there is some evidence too, but you're also building a case with your eyes and just doing the math that, wow, like, yeah, maybe he has been cheating for a long time.
Yeah, and also when you just take at the body of work in that first Cotto fight, Cotto's face, like, he had never been swollen like that. He had never been marked up like that. He had never, you know, it's, like we said when we were first going over the fight, every part of his face and head was swollen. You know, he had knots on his forehead. His nose was broken. His you know, his jaw was swollen. Every part of his face looked to be distorted by the punches from Margarito. And that had never happened to him before. But then also he fought Pacquiao. Pacquiao did the same thing to him. So, you know, Pacquiao didn't have loaded gloves. And listen, I fought Pacquiao. Some people just have heavy, hard hands.
Yeah.
And even Keith Thurman said, he goes, man, Pacquiao's got bricks for hands. And I always said that. I'm like, they're like, oh, how's his power? I'm like, his power is very good, but it's not so much that Pacquiao's this overly powerful guy. He's very fast, but he has bricks for hands. His hands are just hard. So you've got these fast, like they're like bullets coming at you. They're very hard. They're very quick. And they hit you and they're jarring. It's like, oh man, that's hard. And everything hits you. He actually fractured my sternum with a straight left hand. I have a knot on my chest right now to this day from a straight left hand that he hit me in the center of my chest early in that fight.
Are you trying to build a case? Not build the case, but are you playing devil's advocate right here?
I'm playing devil's advocate here. That good, potentially, good. You know, if you were on the side of saying that Margarito didn't have the illicit or the illegal wraps in the Cotto fight, well, like I said, he was landing punches early in that fight. So, yeah, the Mark McGuire analogy. It's like, well, yeah, mm-hmm. You still got to put the bat on the ball. Margarito was still putting the bat on the ball. He's still putting the fist on Cotto, right. And it didn't show up till later, but that's kind of how he always was as a fighter. And he punches with you, and he's got a good chin. And yes, he was damaging Cotto's face in a way that we never saw before, but so did Pacquiao. So right. Some guys just have hands like that. Is Margarito one of those guys? And then on the flip coin, it's like, well, he wasn't that guy against Shane. You know, it could have
been a style thing, though.
Could be a style thing, of course. And that's the other going back to the other side of that advocate being the devil's advocate is like, yeah, it's like, well, you know, he wasn't getting hit.
Right. This is the case you can make for Margarito, because we will look at both sides of this, because I did get some pushback from some members of media and some fans out there. It's like Margarito wasn't like anything that too. He had these skills that you didn't want to see inside the ring, like we talked about before, but he wasn't like elite level. So him losing to Mosley is not out of the realm of possibility.
No.
You take a look at his box rec. He lost a lot of fights. He lost to Paul Williams. You know, he lost some fights in his career. It wasn't like he was like this some elite blue chip type of fighter. So you can make a case that like, yeah, he just lost that fight to Mosley. And yeah, Pacquiao was a whirlwind in 2010. Yeah. Or you go back before to some of those. But on the flip side of things, you look at that run he had where he knocks out Cintron. He goes on to beat Cotto in the fashion that he did. And
to your point, Dan, at one point I just looked it up. Margarito was 10, was 9-3 as a pro. At one point of his career, like you said, he's not a blue chip prospect. He wasn't like some guy that was expected to be this multiple division world champion. Like
that could make for pretty bad performances coming down.
Yeah, he was huge, humongous.
Like, I'm not trying to be a Margarito truther here, but we will look at all the sides, because yeah, there's some damning evidence, and this committee pretty much was like 7-0 is pretty like like it's pretty obvious. There, like they believe that the evidence was there. They believe that this is what happened. But with further, the further they looked into it, the more they realized that this didn't exactly have the plaster. At the end of the pod, we'll figure. We'll get our main takeaways here. But
yeah, we'll see what side of the fence we're on. We're keeping it vague, guys. We're keeping it vague for a reason. This is a show.
February 2009, Dana Rayfield reports the Margarito's. Him and his trainer are both banned in the U.S. We're talking in the span of 10, 12 months. Margarito's top of the world just beat Cotto, now banned from the U.S. And now looking for answers. The California State Athletic Commission revoked the licenses of Margarito and Capetillo 1 year for tampering with Margarito's hand wraps before he was to face Shane Mosley on January 24th. 7-0 vote. For motions for revocation, the panel found that they put a plaster-like substance on illegal pads inside of Margarito's hand wraps. Just went over all that. So this was the case in 2009. Margarito is public enemy number one. But we talked about this guy looks like a villain. Now you're tampering with gloves. You can make a case that tampering with gloves is worse than PED use because it's so deliberate and the effects are so demonstrative. That this is the worst you can do, like, right? Like, you're a boxer. Yeah. Like, this is cardinal sin number one. Loading gloves, hands down.
Loading gloves is the worst. And that's something that, I mean, it's like that movie Assault on the Ring, that documentary where we talk about Louis Resto and Billy Collins, and like it's horrible. And if you remember his face in that, remember how his face looked at the end of that? It did look kind of similar. So. And that kid was never the same after that. His career was pretty much ended. His life was essentially ended. But yeah, man, you're going in there with weapons anyway, guys. We're professionals at damaging people, and then you add that you're going in there with a weapon. It's supposed to be hand to hand combat. That's not hand to hand combat anymore. You know, you've got it's like you're bringing a knife fight to a fist fight, and that's it's evil. It's an evil move.
at that point, you know, you have Cotto too, who was looked at as a darling, and it's good versus evil at this point. I mean, you have a guy right. that was beat up pillar to post, and something about it seemed wrong. Obviously, it comes out that he's got the loaded hand wrap. So he's out for a year. Now, we talked about how that we would play devil's advocate here, and we would offer some pushback on why maybe Margarito didn't do anything wrong, and there wasn't anything in there. Myth number one, I found this on a boxing forum. This guy right here, I forgot his name here. Put this out here. Myth number one, plaster of Paris was found in Margarito's gloves prior to the Mosley fight. Completely false, he says. Trace elements of calcium and sulfur were found in Margarito's gauze. Neither calcium or sulfur are found in plaster of Paris. They're two separate compounds. Calcium sulfate is what is needed for the making of POP, plaster of Paris, which was never found in Margarito's gloves, not even trace elements of it. Calcium sulfur, calcium sulfate may sound incredibly similar, but anyone with basic chemistry background knows better than this. Very different compounds. So Margarito supposedly had plaster of Paris in his gloves. It doesn't even have the essential ingredient in making it. Myth number two, plaster of Paris can be used effectively to load your gloves. This says, according to this guy, was debunked long ago when Cleveland Williams tested the theory that Dempsey's gloves were loaded. Myth number three, there was a brick found in Margarito's gloves. Listen to this scene. Richardson talk about how he found a brick in Margarito's gloves. There's a myth out there, too, that this was mind game. Like, Nassim Richardson was famous for the mind games and was famous for the only thing that he was the only thing that did illegal was the stacking of the hand wraps. And they didn't really find anything in there, according to the first myth there, where it was none of the proper ingredients were in there. But if you went back to the double devil's advocate here, Chris, if you went back to the original ruling, they didn't say plaster of Paris. They said like a plaster like substance. Yeah. Like they determined that the wraps were harder than usual. And Margarito's trainer and Margarito's defense was pretty pathetic. Margarito pretty much said, I did not know. Threw his trainer under the bus. I didn't know he was doing that. And the trainer goes, oh, I made a mistake.
That's damning.
And that was it. So yeah, there are myths.
You didn't know that he was doing what? Now you basically just outed yourself that there was something wrong.
He just pleaded ignorance, Margarito. You just said, all right, no idea. I put my hand out and he wrapped it.
Yeah, but did he say, I didn't know he was doing that? Doing what? That should be if I was his lawyer, I would advise him not to say that. I would advise him to be like, well, no, we avoid this. There was nothing wrong with our glove. This is normal. You know, this is, I don't know what the issue was. I don't know why this one was different, but you know, did anything.
Did not win the appeal. He sits out for a year. Cotto sits out for a while.
I'm thinking, so they're saying that it was reused. And if, you know, you don't know, this thing could be been used for the entire camp. So you're talking about compounded sweat 3 times a week for 8 to 10 weeks. You can sweat sulfur out depending on the foods that you eat. You can, you know, calcium is a normal thing that's found in you know, sweat, especially as over and over again. And listen, I can go grab my pad out of the garage right now. They get flattened out, they get thicker, they get tighter, they get harder. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's like hard, but it's like it's definitely harder than a normal gauze would be, especially if it's freshly made. So it could have just been that is the case. That is, you know,
well, do you understand these Margarito truthers a little bit?
100%, 100%. I do. 100%. But again, you still can't do that. That's illegal. You can't use the old gauze. So whether you're trying to make it say that it's plaster of Paris or not, you still can't use old gauze.
Plaster of Paris just sounds so dramatic.
It does. It does. Plaster, but I think Louis Resto, I think it was, right? I think in that case, the Billy Collins, yeah. I think it actually was plaster, which is insane.
So there's both sides of it. There are some Margarito truthers out there in the media. I think Dougie Fisher was leading this brigade for a while. This guy Gabe Montoya, who tweeted at me all weekend, maybe sent me about 10, 12 tweets, because he's like the ringleader of Margarito Got Railroaded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they point to these topics that we just brought up. And but if you look back in history, the guy was suspended for a year and they found something in there. And that's the story as of now. So Cotto goes on, I can't believe it, 7 months later, he fights Michael Jennings, 2009, starts his comeback campaign, beats Jennings in the Garden, fights Joshua Claudi at the Garden 4 months later. Wow. Well, I feel like today's boxing, the beating he took, he would have been out for a year and a half. Cotto gets right back in there, fights twice in 2009, three times in 2009, culminating with the Pacquiao fight, which was a huge payday. I mean, whatever he lost for the De La Hoya payday, he got in with then some for Pacquiao, because Pacquiao at that time was starting to become Pacquiao, 2009 Pacquiao. He was looking for Mayweather. He'd just beaten De La Hoya, was pound for pound number one Pacquiao. Really fun fight, Pacquiao, Cotto. Go back and watch that one. Then he goes on to fight Yuri Foreman. And it's around that time. He goes up to 154, Cotto. It's around that time where Margarito's back from suspension. And we're talking about a rematch, obviously. I mean, this is bad blood. There's built-in storylines. But talking to some top-ranked people over the weekend, like, Cotto wasn't too keen on it. He did not want to see. He didn't want to be a part of it again. You know, at this time, there's no – Margarito's a public enemy number one still. Cheater. Cotto's beloved still. But this is when we start beating the drum for the rematch, Chris. And we get closer and closer, and they agree to a rematch in 2011, which was an awesome fight too.
Yeah, I was training in Robert Garcia's camp in Oxnard, and Margarito would come into camp. He would come into the gym and talk to Robert. And that was the first time I met him and saw him. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe how big he is. Tall, big, what? But his eye, I'll never forget his eye, because it was after the Pacquiao fight.
Glass eye.
It looked like, remember the movie, the original Terminator? Now I'm dating ourselves here. The original Terminator movie. When he's in the mirror and he cuts out his eye, fake eye, and then it removes and it's got that metal thing. It looked like that. Like his eye looked so bad. It looked like his orbital had been crushed in and they tried to reposition it, and it just was not right. It looked bad and it looked dead. It didn't look like that eye had vision. It looked, I don't know. I'm sure it did, because he actually got the fight. But that eye looked gnarly.
Yeah, they shopped the fight around to multiple different states, and I don't know how New York ended up passing. This is before.
I know New York is one of the most stringent about medical.
Yeah, but this is before the Magomed debacle.
Yeah, true.
Even though it's still New York before the Magomed debacle. If you're not familiar with that, that was one of the biggest lawsuits in the history of combat sports in New York. Biggest payout, or the Magomed got brain damage from a fight that went on too long.
Was that fight? That fight changed my career. I wanted to quit boxing after that.
Yeah, I've been to a few of those fights where I was kind of fed up and was like, what am I doing in my life? This is a brutal, brutal sport. So they get it in New York, which was nuts. And talking to Carl Moretti over the weekend, saying like, it took forever. And up until fight week, they're looking at the eye. They finally okay it. We get the rematch December 4th, 2011, fever pitch all week long. Margarito is the villain. He's making fun of Freddie Roach's Parkinson's. He's just doing everything in the book. He's embracing being that villain role, saying I'm innocent. They do the face-off with Max Kellerman, where Margarito's just calling Cotto a bitch to his face. Cotto's got the tablet. He's showing the hand wrap. Cotto's showing them the hand wrap. Look, there's a crack in it. Like, it's clearly hardened. That's another myth. Want to go back. After the Cotto fight, gloves are off, and Margarito's walking around the ring with the hand wraps on, shaking hands with everyone. So there's some people out there saying, like, if this guy had loaded wraps, don't you think he would have took those off too?
Yeah, well, they show that stupid picture where it looks like, you know, like you said, like it looks like it's cracked. It looks like, to me, when I looked at it, it just looks like a piece of the padding of the glove was busted through, and which happens. Guys, these gloves, a fight glove is a one use. It's not like when you train with them, you see how flimsy they really are. They break apart over time. And when you got a guy who's a real good puncher, you know, you can bust through that padding pretty easily, especially if you have horse hair. Those horse hair gloves, they come apart really easily. And he always wore the what are they called? Drawing a blank.
Reyes? Now,
the Reyes gloves, which are the horse hair Mexican style, very soft leather. Or very hard leather, rather, but the padding itself was horsehair, and it would like separate. That's another thing. If you're gonna be on the, like, what are you saying, the Margarito truther?
Yeah.
Horsehair gloves, the gloves that are fought in horsehair. As the fight wears on, that horsehair gets matted down and spreads out. So now you're exposing more and more of the bones of the hand. So as a fight wears on, those gloves actually get harder. And that's just because that's just how those gloves are. I used to hate fighting guys when they had the Reyes, because the leather was very abrasive. It would always leave marks.
Puncher's glove. December 4th, 2011, at Madison Square Garden, we get the rematch, fever pitch all week long. wild Madison Square Garden, loudest I've probably ever heard it, because there was a fever. There was this extra juice in the crowd that night because our guy, their guy, Miguel Cotto, was getting his revenge. Right before the fight starts, Max Kellerman says, "Revenge or repeat?" And the fight starts, and Cotto is boxing beautifully. Margarito is like three steps behind. The eyes are obviously a problem. Cotto is targeting it, the eye, like crazy. 52 of Cotto's 90 landed punches through round six were on the right eye of Margarito. It got to the point, but I will say this. Margarito was landing some big shots, like, once again, on Cotto. Cotto's face was starting, it was like the beginning stages of starting to look like it did in the first fight, too. Another Margarito truther point there. Stoppage comes in round 10. Like round 8, round 9, the Margarito's camp is just pleading with the doctor, pleading with the coroner. Steve Smoger is the referee, too. Keep that in mind. This guy never stopped fights.
No.
He was like 30 feet away when he was smoking a cigarette during the fight. He doesn't even care. Like, he barely even gets in there to stop anything. So they got the right ref for this one. But the doctor is in there from the 8th, 9th, and 10th round looking at the eye. The eye is completely shut, like completely shut. They stop the fight. Cotto walks over to – this is the most demonstrative thing Cotto's probably ever done in his career in terms of celebrating. Walks over to the corner and just stares at Margarito for like a solid 30, you know, a minute, just staring at him. Where they ask him about it, and he goes, "I was tasting my victory." Miguel Cotto was pretty damn good. Lampley with a great call. Miguel Cotto. Oh, he landed 86 punches on Margarito's right eye. Lampley goes, "Miguel Cotto, 86th Margarito's right eye."
Nice. Nice.
Margarito afterwards says, "He hits like a girl. He hits like a girl." They interviewed the doctor, which you don't see much today. They got the doctor's thoughts because there wasn't a lot of booing. No one was like upset. The crowd was so happy. This was like you're going to write a script for this type of saga. This is how it ends. It ends with Cotto getting the victory, the crowd in a freaking frenzy. They interview the doctor, and he's like, "Man, that eye's messed up. Like, Margarito's eye is destroyed." And there it is. Like, it's the exclamation point on this saga. It kind of closed the book on it. But Margarito, like, there's the more truthers out there that say if that fight wasn't stopped, Margarito could have looked a lot like the first fight. Robert Garcia says, I wasn't stopping this fight.
Well, yeah, and Margarito was vehemently fighting the stoppage. He didn't want it to get stopped. He didn't care about his eye. He was a monster. He didn't care. He was willing to go blind in any one of those fights. I mean, the Pacquiao fight, he went 12 rounds. His face was destroyed. That eye was bad.
That ruined him.
His orbital was shattered, and he fought through and was getting hit a lot. It wasn't like he had a second gear where he could be defensive. He was still taking tons of shots from a guy that was just way too fast who hit hard. But yeah, he's a warrior. He was going to go out no matter what. It was a different fight, though. Cotto fought really smart in the second fight. He didn't get into the same exchanges he did in the first fight. He didn't need to, but I don't think that if they didn't, I think that fight was a foregone conclusion that Cotto was winning that fight. They didn't need.
I'm not saying that just Cotto to stop lost, it.
Not even lost. I don't even think Margarito was really coming on that much.
No, he was shot. He was a shot fighter at that point.
Yeah,
I mean, he was like, there's a faction out there, or there's a sentiment out there that, you know, Pacquiao gave Margarito some like sweet justice in that 2010 fight.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, gave him the punishment that he desperately needed, not only because of the Freddie Roach stuff, but just for Cotto, you know, the good guys, quote unquote, Pacquiao and Cotto. Cotto gets the win.
As if there's good guys in this sport.
Well, that went into this saga. I mean, the truthers out there are like, Margarito got railroaded. He's not Cotto. He did not get fair reporting. I will say that the state of boxing journalism was a lot better in 2008 than it is now. I think they did cover it properly. If it happened now, there's not many boxing journalists now. Like, it's just that's gone. So, I mean, we're at the end of this show, and I'm kind of, the more investigating that I've done and the more that you're talking to me about this gloves, it's very possible that they just used the old hand wraps that were already hard and like illegal, but also used to form an advantage. The plaster of Paris seems like that was not the case. Was it something else in there on top of old gauze and old hand wraps? Could very well be that as well.
Yeah, so like that's a question. Like, is it is it not as, you know, spiteful, as malicious as we thought, and it's more just like ignorance? Like, oh, we're just we always use this pad. We're reusing.
We want
the pad.
It to be malicious.
It's like, well, we can't reuse the pad. You can't. It's illegal. No doubt about it. But was it that much of a game changer the way that everybody thought, the way that Team Kodo thought?
Right.
Now that's the question. I don't know,
used
man.
It hard, man.
Yeah. Well, he also used it as motivation for the rematch. You know, like you said, he didn't even want the fight, and then you know, once he took it. I mean, he put his heart and soul into that victory. And I think, I mean, God, imagine how sweet. When we said, I'm taking in my victory. I mean, how sweet that must have tasted. If you really think that that guy cheated, if you really think that he loaded those gloves and beat you down the way that you did, the vindication on that victory, oof, there's nothing that tastes better than that.
Cotto believed it. Pacquiao was on record saying that he thought so as well. There's a large contingent of people out there that believe Margarito is the worst villain in the last 20 years of boxing.
I was that guy for a long time.
There's a small contingent that believe he was railroaded and he was just an average fighter that got the most out of his abilities throughout his career. He went on to retire after the fight, but then he came back. No big fights. Cotto went on to fight Mayweather. Canelo, Sergio. Had some very big nights in a Hall of Fame career. That's the tale of Cotto Margarito. 3 years, revenge, repeat, saga. Intertwined with Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya. Big names. And a saga that ended with in blood. And how we could pitch it to today is the Devin Haney, Ryan Garcia saga. When you have, like, Cotto didn't sue him. He fought him.
Yeah. Fought him and stopped
him.
And
got a win. And yep. A lot of people, when this saga was on playing with Haney and Ryan Garcia, a lot of people pointed to this very saga and was like, look what Cotto did. He just fought him, you know?
So he handled it the way that fighters handle things. You know, we don't handle things in court. We handle things in the squared circle.
There you go. The tale of Cotto Margarito. Hope everyone enjoyed this episode. I love doing these. It kind of is a change up a little bit. I'm getting kind of beat down by the boxing news lately. So whenever I can spend a weekend watching these old fights and researching, I felt like I was doing homework. And this is like the presentation to you guys. So it was really cool.
So it's fun. It's fun to kind of revel in nostalgia, the sport. I mean, you know, you and I both grew up watching this. And these nights were all like, you know.
Legendary nights.
I was going to say, exactly. The Legendary Nights was such an apt name for that amazing series, but it really is for us. Like, these are legendary nights. These are legendary people. These are legendary events. And it just brings you right back. I'm always amazed at how much I remember from all of these events. You know, it just brings you right back. I'm like, oh, I remember this. I remember that. Listen, I was around the gym when Margarito was trying to get this fight. And I remember talking to Robert about how we couldn't get someone to sanction it because of his eye. Like, mm-hmm. I was literally there listening to, you know, behind the scenes. I think I was 12-0 or something like that. Yeah. Kind of listening to this stuff, like not knowing anything about, you know, commissions and how things worked. And I was like, this is cool.
It was good stuff. We'll be back at the end of the week with your normal boxing news, because there is a lot of stuff going on. It was a Ring Magazine awards show that produced a lot of headlines. We may be seeing Canelo Crawford. We may be seeing Ryan Haney too. Tyson Fury apparently retired. We're going to get to all of that
again
later on in the week when it becomes more concrete. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Let us know if you want us to do more of these look backs. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs, especially if Plessis or Paris